Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I almost said Wednesday because it seemed like it used to always be raining on Wednesdays. Well, no, it's Tuesday, but boy, has it been raining. Hope everybody is doing all right today, trying to stay dry. You know who's really struggling to stay dry? Is the duster. And the thing is, we've got, you know, now you have Christmas decorations and the tree and things like that. And he spends a lot of time inside, but he also with the Christmas tree where it sits in our house, there's like a bay window in the front. There's usually a love seat sitting there, so he can't see outside the bay windows. Now he can. Oh, and anytime there's anybody outside, he wants to get out, but then he gets out and he's soaking wet.
He's not allowed back in the house.
We have that combination of, it's that Christmas wet dog smell, which you don't really want.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Wet dog sleeping on the floor. I don't remember that being the next line. Oh, my. But anyway, yeah.
So. Wet dog with an even wetter nose, right?
Really. It is amazing. All right, but hope everybody doing well. And yes, not having too much trouble on this. This is just ugly weather. It's not bitterly cold. You know, we haven't had severe weather or anything. It's not all that wintry.
You're right. No, we've had colder.
It looks it sometimes when you look outside, then you step out and it's 65 degrees.
Yeah, it's downright, you know, it's like subtropical. You know,
yeah, it's crazy. Just wait till tomorrow. That's what's great about this part of the country. Have you seen the forecast for tomorrow?
We got some. Was it in the 30s tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow's high is in the 40s. Ooh. And it's going to be freezing tomorrow night.
Frosty.
Yeah. Well, he is part of the season.
That's right. Always. Yeah, 'tis the season.
All right, welcome in, everybody, to the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We'd love for you to join in as well. We've got a good bit to talk about. More information starting to be available as to possible targets for different teams from the transfer portal. Auburn is getting quite a few players set up to visit, and you can see the difference from prior portal experiences with Auburn as they're trying to get players in early. The portal just opened yesterday. Auburn already has about a half dozen players that are expected to be in town before the end of this week, including a former very highly touted quarterback who got his first opportunity to start this year. Things didn't go exactly the way he would like. But Jackson Arnold, the Oklahoma quarterback, is expected to be in town, I believe, Thursday.
Jackson Arnold, who spent most of the offseason as Oklahoma's starting quarterback, went to SEC Media Days as one of the representatives of the Sooners. He was benched. I want to say it was during the Tennessee game, right? They made the switch and sort of, you know, worked there. A lot of offensive issues at Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's offensive line. They lost their top five receivers to injury.
I think Auburn's quarterback situation is a good place to start. Like you said, Auburn has a shopping list of different different positions where they probably, you know, talking with Clemente yesterday on the Observer podcast. Like does Auburn have? Is there a spot that comes to mind where Auburn needs a starter and a backup from the portal going in? I mean, quarterback maybe.
As obvious as quarterback, is the most obvious position.
Although I think Hugh Freeze would breathe a sigh of relief if Walker or Deuce were able to beat out a backup quarterback that they brought in. I think the question is,
you'd like to have somebody for them to compete with who has some experience.
Exactly. I think, and that gets back to, you know, when folks ask the question, well, and we had Spector raise the reasonable point yesterday on the show, you know, why isn't Auburn looking to Walker White or Deuce as a more realistic candidate to be the starter next year? Why does everyone assume it's going to be portal? I think part of the reason is because if you don't add to the quarterback room, then you don't have, like, Walker and or Deuce, if they win the job,
they've nothing to gauge them against.
They've almost won it by forfeit, mm-hmm. right? Because they aren't competing against anyone with a track record as a college football quarterback. Walker or Deuce could still start games in 2025. The question is, who are they competing with in that room? And if you bring in somebody who has played major conference college football successfully and they are beaten out by Walker White or mm-hmm. Deuce Knight, you feel much better about the possibility that those guys are going to succeed within, you know, when they actually get on the field. And so I think that's part of the reason. The other reason is it's just so difficult for the pressure on Hugh Freeze to win in year three after going under 500 in league play two straight years, under 500 overall two straight years. The pressure to play, the pressure for his team to play well, I think makes it very difficult to go with a quarterback without some track record as a major conference football player.
I agree. I mean, you've got to have some type of safety net or like I said, something to gauge it against some bar for them to reach.
Although, in the case of Jackson Arnold, and I think everything you're going to say, everything that you say about Jackson Arnold as a recruit is 100% true. Everything people thought was going to happen at Oklahoma, like that is all accurate. It's still a bet on potential, right? It's still, I mean, going out and getting Jackson Arnold in a high-pressure situation to be your starter in 2025 is a –
well, that
that's a bet on being the guy.
If you have that potential, you have an experienced guy, then you have two really talented young quarterbacks, you'd feel like, all right, the best is going to come to the top, and you'll be better off. You've got more options there. Jackson Arnold's numbers from this past year, I mean, they weren't bad. Because he was a starter, he was then benched, and then he regained a starting job. He finished the year completing right at 63% of his passes, 1,400 and something yards, 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. That's one thing that you like is, now he got sacked a lot.
Was Hawkins the other guy? Yeah, and I would almost describe it more as Hawkins getting benched than Arnold regaining the job.
Well, but I mean that's how most guys that get benched the job back.
But I would say, I mean, that
quarterback struggles.
And no, that's not a slight against Arnold. I'm saying, like, I would say to point the picture of, like, Oklahoma. Oh, the offensive problems for Oklahoma were not solved when Jackson Arnold went to the bench.
I know
they did hit the two offensive, you know, the two big plays against Auburn. The quarterback Auburn saw against Oklahoma was Hawkins.
Jackson Arnold beat Alabama.
That was a week later. Yeah, so Jackson Arnold was the quarterback. You're right. He was out there for the Alabama game, and he played well enough down the stretch in 2023 to have Oklahoma thinking Dylan Gabriel can walk and we can build the whole thing.
And Dylan Gabriel is now the quarterback of the number one team in the country at Oregon. So, Jackson Arnold was one of the most highly touted quarterback prospects we've seen in a while. I have read on Oklahoma sites, and this may surprise people, that he is the most highly touted quarterback that Oklahoma has ever signed. Let that sink. Oklahoma's had a couple of quarterbacks.
Yeah, but I was trying to
think. Most of those guys were transfers. Yeah, think about it. When you had the run under Lincoln Riley.
Big-time five stars that, like, signed with Oklahoma. And because the other thing, Bob Stoops was famous for taking guys that weren't necessarily everybody's idea of an all Big 12 type of quarterback and winning a lot of games with them, including current Tennessee coach Josh Heupel, you know, as examples of quarterbacks. And who was the guy who won the Heisman? Jason White, remember the Oklahoma quarter? Like, I mean, a guy that nobody looked at and thought he was going to be a superstar college football quarterback or make a much of a dent in the NFL, and he won a Heisman Trophy and they went all the way to the national championship with him at the helm. So I mean, Jackson Arnold, I think, is absolutely, it makes sense that a coach would look at him and think, I can unlock what's been missing so far in his college football career if I put the right pieces around him and I spend a season developing him into what people thought he was going to be.
And then Auburn has the if not the one of for sure the top rated receivers in the portal visiting, I believe tomorrow and Thursday, and Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech,
who was a Christian told some a couple of stories about his recruiting trail. His time on the
he's a guy whose stock exploded his senior year after he'd been committed early. I believe it's to Western Kentucky,
Arbuckle,
and Auburn was in on him, but he chose Georgia Tech over Auburn.
Right, and that's I think Oklahoma. I know Ole Miss is a player. Whenever you hear anybody in the portal, especially sure. a skill position player, Arbuckle was the offensive coordinator of the offense that recruited him to Western Kentucky. So maybe if he's looking to make impacts at Oklahoma, we'll see. But I like Auburn's chances here.
Well, I like Auburn getting him in right now. I mean, the portal opened yesterday. He's in tomorrow. If things go well, this is what you want in the portal. You know, these guys generally have an idea of what they're looking for. If they get it, the other schools might not even get visits.
Singleton played 1 year at Georgia Tech or two years.
Two years.
So he was on the trail when Hugh Freeze and his assistants first arrived.
Right.
And I think they wanted to see how it went with some other players. Christian told the story. He's Darvin Adams' cousin.
Yes, he is.
And this is a guy that was I think was interested in signing with Auburn on signing day 2 years ago and maybe didn't necessarily get the offer, ends up at Georgia Tech. 2 years later, different situation at Auburn.
He's
had an excellent career so far. Would be a great addition to an Auburn room that wants to add. I think at least one veteran receiver.
Yeah. So we'll talk more on because there are other players. One of the top edge rushers. In college football is going to be visiting in the next couple of days as well. We can get into that and much more. We're going to check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, here in just a few minutes. So we'll get back to that a little bit. We'll obviously talk to Andy about basketball now that he's back and Auburn's, blowout win over Richmond and get ready for Ohio State.
There was so much going on yesterday, Bill. There was so much to talk about that we didn't mention Juan Soto at all.
No,
we did
you're
not.
Right.
We did not mention the biggest contract in baseball history and the Mets pulling off. I mean, they land the biggest fish in free agency this offseason. One of the biggest fish that will ever.
Yeah, he's just 26 hit free years agency. Old. That's the thing.
I mean,
is it a 15-year deal?
15 years.
$765
the number for Juan Soto, the superstar outfielder who will play for his fourth team in 4 years. Nationals.
Yeah, but he just moves across town this time.
This year, that's right. Nationals, Padres, Yankees, and now he's a Met. I suspect he will still be a Met when the 2026 season.
That would probably be a bigger story than him signing for the biggest contract in history, if he's not.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be playing for five teams in 5 years, Bill. I think he's going to be there for a while. But, yeah, rejoining the National League, jumping back into the pool, Juan Soto is, it's going to be a battle royal in the National League East because I don't think the Braves are backing down, believing they've got the pieces there to contend if everybody stays healthy and they make the right moves in free agency. And then the Phillies are still the Phillies, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Phillies maybe add to what they've got right now this offseason. So it's a very competitive top of the National League East with Juan Soto joining the fray.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Stick with us. We're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet and want
they're not playing, so some of our returns, we've just got to jump right back in there and say welcome back in.
You want me to do one unofficially? You're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and the other guy.
and our third, sometimes here in the studio, lots of times, though, he's busy over on campus trying to catch back up a little bit, I'm sure, still after all the miles that he put in over the last couple of weeks, is the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us on the Drive Hotline. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I hope you guys are having a good day. get through a wet Tuesday.
Man, no kidding. The first 2 days this week, I'm glad I haven't had to really do that much and drive around, because it's just, yeah, it's been miserable.
Andy, we've talked a lot about the ambitious schedule of the Auburn men's basketball team, but for the guys who cover the team and for folks who call the games like you, this is I have to imagine it's nice to be home for at least a couple of days after. You've been treated to excellent basketball, but you've gone across the country to see this team.
Literally across the country, from the East Coast to the Hawaiian Islands, and it is good to be back. It's good to be home for a couple of days, and now the two road trips that we have coming up in the next week and a half are one to Atlanta and one to Birmingham.
Right.
So
reasonable.
A lot more easy to manage. At this point, just from a travel standpoint, albeit that the competition is certainly on par with the rest of the non-conference schedule that Auburn has had. And next up for the Tigers, as you know, is that 11 o'clock game Saturday morning, 11 o'clock Central Time in Atlanta, which is this holiday Hoopsgiving event has become a staple on Bruce Pearl's schedule year in and year out. And it's hard to blame him for not wanting to go back to Atlanta, if you look at nothing but how Auburn has recruited Atlanta and Georgia in the last 10 years. So on Auburn, an opportunity to go back and play State Farm Arena on Saturday. It's the first game of the day, the first of, I think, three games in four games, on Saturday. Auburn and Ohio State open it up at 11, and our broadcast starts at 10:30 Central Time over on Wings 94.3.
Yeah, the Tigers stay number two in the polls this week, and I was just thinking out loud yesterday. That's not bad. I don't mind not being the number one team. It keeps a little bit of a chip there on the Tigers' shoulders as Tennessee jumps them to the number one spot.
Well, listen, I mean, it was an odd week in that a lot of the teams in the top five were beaten, mm-hmm. including Auburn at Duke. Tennessee remains undefeated on the season. I can't blame them for moving Tennessee to number one. You look at both the NCAA net and the KenPom ratings, and that's less of a – that uses a lot more algorithms for it rather than just votes. And those are the top two teams in every one of the polls right now. And Auburn remains number one, and it may be number two with the KenPom rating. That does change quite a bit, but – you lose your first game of the year, and you lose it in a game where you could have played better, although you played well enough, I think, to win it. But hats off to Duke for winning that ball game at home. And then you come back in a potential trap game on Sunday. Ooh. You play well, and you dominate Richmond from start to finish. You never trailed in the game after Jani Broome's basket. Auburn was never tied in that game. Guys, that's the third time in the last four games that Auburn has done that. They did that to North Carolina. They did that to Memphis in the second and third games in Hawaii. And then after the loss to Duke, they come back and do it again to Richmond at Neville Arena Sunday morning.
You know, back to the game at Duke, you're exactly right. I mean, when you can go into Cameron and don't feel like you played your best game, but you were right there and had a chance to win it, you know there's not going to be any obstacle that's going to be any tougher than going into that arena last week.
And there will be tough obstacles.
Yes, there will.
Coming up in the Southeastern Conference.
Whew.
But you won't face a home. You won't face a road test that's any harder than Duke. I mean, there will still be very tough road tests coming up. You still have to go to Tuscaloosa and what will be a charged atmosphere, to be sure. Going to South Carolina will be tough this year. So, yeah, there are some games coming up, but none will be any tougher from an environment standpoint than that ball game was at Duke. I thought it was fascinating, and it was hard for me to gauge how many Auburn people were there because it wasn't a concentrated effort or concentrated area of mm-hmm. Auburn people that you see at football games, you know what I mean? But the fact that Duke put out a release the day after on Twitter and elsewhere.
Oh, their AD sent an email to their season ticket holders.
Please don't sell your tickets to opposing fans. I thought that said a great deal about what Bruce Pearl likes to call the Auburn witnesses on the road. I could hear it. You could hear it through the broadcast, but it was tough for me to see exactly where I was. It was kind of a flex of orange and blue, the Auburn blue around Cameron Indoor Stadium, you know, last week.
This team, I mean, they're so fun to watch. I mean, they really are unselfish. They get after you defensively, and they're just so many more scoring threats now than Auburn's had in the past. And Janai Broome is gonna get a triple double before long.
And it may be a triple double in assists or blocks. Because he's Auburn's
leading assist man
right now. He could
get a quadruple double, as a matter of fact.
You're right. He is Auburn's leading assist man right now. And if there is if I was asked this morning on another show, what is the biggest improvement on this team? And it may be Janai Broome's passing ability. Because so many times now, as dominant as he has been as a scorer on the low post, he is getting doubled by a lot of teams that aren't as big as Auburn. And that has opened up his assist game. And, Buddy, has he taken advantage of that? You watch him now. When he gets doubled, he isn't trying to find a way to the basket. He's trying to find a way to the open man in the Auburn offense. And to their credit, they're taking advantage of that as well. What has been the biggest concern, I'll say concern, by Auburn fans, the Auburn family, in the last 5 years about Auburn basketball? That two-guard shooting. Well, look at what Miles Kelly is doing, shooting 48% from three. Look at what Chad Baker-Mazar is doing, shooting 48 from three. And Denver Jones, who is Auburn's point guard, starting point guard right now, is shooting the ball. They each had three threes in the first half Sunday morning against Richmond. If that continues, watch out with this Auburn ball club. Watch out, because this team can go a long, long way if this kind of play continues.
And then you've got Tahad coming in.
Well, you've got Tahad coming in, and now he appears to have moved into that secondary point guard role, because he got a lot of minutes on Saturday, and then not only that, but we saw Jakai Howard get a lot more playing time. Bruce Pearl told me that he would get more playing time on Sunday. Now, we found out after the game that Chad Baker had also offered to give up some of his minutes in that ball game, and boy, it's starting to pay off, because there is depth with this Auburn team. And I was asked this morning a really interesting question about the depth, and can that play against Auburn? Because you want to get that rotation when you get into the, you know, deep into the season, and certainly when it comes to the conference. So I said, well, I can understand that, but think about it this way. You're about to get into the grind of the Southeastern Conference. Two games, week in and week out. And there is bound to be a night where one of these guys just has an off night, or heaven forbid, there's going to be a game or two where somebody is banged up and isn't playing, or isn't playing as many minutes. And that depth, I think, at that point, becomes all the more important for this Auburn basketball team.
Well, it's just not it's not realistic to try to play Bruce Pearl's style with four guys contributing at the one, the two, and the three, right? Like, someone's going to get banged up, or someone's going to get to foul trouble. Like, you need options you can rely on, and being able to expand that rotation. And we'll see what happens with Pegues, but being able to work Jakai Howard into that rotation on top of the possibility that he could get, you know, he could become even more effective than he is. You're also lightening the load for Denver and for Chad and for Miles, all of whom are really important pieces. And Denver in particular probably doesn't get talked about enough. I know Bruce has sort of lamented the lack of coverage of how important Denver Jones is to this team. But yeah, being able to work Jakai in spares overworking some of those guys.
Well, and Denver, I mean, I certainly noticed what that young man's done for this Auburn team. And it's a selfless style, because as he, when he came in, guys, he was the two guard. He was a shooter for Auburn. And with both of Auburn's starting point guards from a year ago moving on, he has taken that mantle as Auburn's point guard. And not only from an offensive standpoint, but from a defensive standpoint as well. And his numbers are still really good. His numbers are better this year than they were a year ago for Auburn. So I think Auburn's depth will help it. Do I think that Bruce Pearl will start to whittle down those numbers as we get deeper and deeper into the conference season? Probably. Probably will. But I think Auburn's going to need those numbers throughout the Southeastern Conference. Just because a guy has an off night. Dan, as you mentioned, foul trouble, because we know that that has been a problem at times for Auburn. It was a bit of a problem at Duke. Put Duke at the line too many times in that game. And it was one of those games, guys, where you look at the disparity at the free throw line, and I really didn't put that on the officials either, quite frankly. I just thought that Auburn fouled too much in that ball game. Now, there are a couple that I disagreed with, but not to a point where there have been games in the past where you look at the discrepancy in foul shots and you're like, you know what, you can question that. I really didn't think that was the issue last week at Duke.
Talking with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, here on this rainy, and I mean, the rain has really picked up over here on this side of town, Tuesday. Be careful if you're out and about. Sometimes with, I appreciate the regrading and resurfacing of the roads, but some of them where it's just that black roadway, it can really fool you. It can be a little tricky. So be careful if you're out and about. Andy, can you stick with us? We'll talk a little
Absolutely.
Football and more. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break, and we continue our conversation with the voice of the Tigers when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Need an electrician you can trust? Call Thompson Electric. Locally owned and operated, Thompson Electric is a part of our community. A fully licensed and insured electrical contractor with expert technicians.
By the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, it's crazy. This is a time of year where until recently it would be either, all right, we're starting here a little bit about bowl prep. Actually, we weren't even up to the early signing period. The early signing period is behind us, and it looked like a very good one considering for Auburn. But we're jumped right into the portal and all kinds of player movement. So, I mean, there's still plenty of news about football.
Fast and furious is the news that has been coming out really since signing day. The rumors of those that might be in the portal, and then Monday, yesterday the portal opened, and boy, it's just every time you check with Justin Ferguson or Brian Matthews or Jason Caldwell or any of those guys, I mean, there seems to be new news coming in, either an Auburn player that is opting in the portal or those that Auburn is looking at in the portal. So, I mean, listen, before, Bill, when we were doing this show together, there was a chance after signing day, albeit, now this was when it was in February, you could kind of take a breath.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is not the case any longer, is it?
No, it's not. And I believe the coaches are glad that the early signing period moved up. You know, the last few years, it's been like the week of Christmas that signing day came up, which gave, you know, coaches no time there. Auburn, in an odd sense, Auburn is in a little bit of a more comfortable situation with not having to be concerned with a ball game coming up right now while Hugh Freeze is trying to manage the roster.
Although Hugh Freeze did mention that he, you know, even when Auburn had a ball game last December, he spent much of it worried about more focused on recruiting because he had to.
Well, yeah, last year the signing day was like the 20th.
Imagine though, like there are coaches dealing with, I guess, your reward for making the playoff is that you have to get ready for a high-stakes football game while all this is happening at the same time and all the players are hitting the portal, thinking about next year.
Well, I don't think any of the coaches feel that this has been that the timing is figured out yet. Not to their advantage. That's for certain. I think they have made an improvement, but if you talk to the coaches, I don't think they feel that enough of an improvement has been made at this point. But the reality is this is where we are at this point. Would Auburn rather be preparing for a high-stakes ball game at this point? Sure. The fact is it's not. And so get after it on the portal. Get that roster together and get ready for winter workouts and spring ball.
Yeah, one thing that is so different in the portal than high school recruiting is a lot of times in high school you want to be that last visit. You can't afford to let a player visit multiple other places, or you may never see those guys.
Yeah, it's a different way of going about the business, and it is a business right now. Because when it's through the season and it's the high school players that you're bringing in, that last visit is a key. Now you've got to get them in, period, when you can get them in and do the best job you can while they're on your campus.
And it's obvious now with both Holden Garner and Hank Brown in the portal. We'd been talking that the quarterback was going to be a priority. It's an absolute necessity now, and it's I can't imagine Auburn not doing everything they can to get two quarterbacks out of the portal.
And I don't ever recall that ever happening before. Do you, Bill?
No.
Where you're talking
no.
not one,
not here,
but two guys that Hugh Freeze talked about this last week, and I think. And maybe he knew at that point. I think Holden Garner had already pretty well announced, and the rumors were out pretty hot and heavy about Hank Brown at that point. But he talked about it. Listen, we will have four scholarship quarterbacks this coming season. Well, he's got half of that with Walker. Now he's got to get two more guys, and likely one of those is going to be his starter in all likelihood coming for the start of the 2025 season.
Sure, because, Walker's experience, the total college experience Auburn has right now on its roster is Walker's fourth quarter experience, two games ago.
So. And we were saying earlier
in
the show, Andy, it very well could end up being Walker or Deuce eventually in 2025 or in 2026, but you would want experience competing with them at the very least. You don't want either of those guys on the field by forfeit. You want those guys having won the job against players who have produced in college football before.
Well, the conventional thinking is that one of these two that Auburn may sign out of the transfer portal is likely to be your starting quarterback for the Baylor game that starts the 2025 season at Baylor.
Yeah,
remember, Auburn opens up on the road at Baylor next year.
That is right, and that's why it would also be
unless the SEC bans road non-conference games after what happened Sunday.
The non-conference games weren't the factor for the college football playoff.
Well, I'd like to know, Andy, do you think the committee got it right? I have very little problem with the 12 teams that ultimately made it. I actually think the best team that didn't make it was Ole Miss.
Well, yeah, I think there's everybody has their team that they thought should be in at this point. For the Alabama folks, and I don't want to stir up our hornet's nest here, but probably will, to say that it was their non-conference schedule that didn't get them in. I think you look at a loss at Vanderbilt, and you look at the late season loss to Oklahoma,
and the three-score loss to Oklahoma
is the reason that you're not in the playoffs right now. Ole Miss can look at its losses in the league as well as a result.
Oh, that home loss to Kentucky.
They're not in the playoffs at this point. I have no trouble with SMU making it in at this point. And if we thought that, well, if it's going to be a 12-team field, we're not going to have that last team that didn't get in. That's not going to be the issue. Yes,
oh, come on.
Going
I mean,
to be the issue. It's that way.
Look at basketball, the 69th
basketball
team. Right.
Or baseball. Yeah, it doesn't matter. There will also be that controversy for the teams that don't make it in, regardless of how large the field is.
Oh, certainly. No, I think and it seems to be the pro 9-3 SEC team making the playoff argument seems to be The SEC and the Big Ten are so far above the rest of the pack, everyone else should be a one-bid league. And I don't think we've necessarily gotten there yet, but it does seem to like they're you know, that seems to be the thought on one side.
It feels that way. Now let's find out in a couple of weeks. I mean, that's the thing.
If there's a team that's in this field right now that I would have the biggest problem with as a result of schedule, is Penn State.
That's interesting. I know people have questioned, like, where are the wins for Indiana, but as people will say with both Indiana and SMU, like, you play who's on the schedule.
Exactly.
What was Texas's biggest win? Vandy?
Well,
I mean, there are a few teams that the schedule...
Michigan?
Look, there's no way around it. Schedule can play a big factor in your record. I mean, that's not any brilliant, you know, deduction on my part, but it is. I mean, it's something that if you're fortunate to have a lighter schedule, a more, you know, makeable, workable schedule, I think that's why Kirby was a little frustrated. But my goodness, Kirby, you've been in the East for the last, you know,
right,
20, 30 years.
Well, and here's another question I think that this past weekend brings up right now. How does what happened and what teams that didn't make it from the SEC in this first 12-team field, how does that affect the future of a 9-team or a 9-SEC schedule?
I can't see it now, Andy. I just cannot see any coach or AD saying, oh, yeah, let's play another conference game.
Turn a lose.
Unless the number from ESPN is so astronomical that they cannot turn down that money.
I think that number, and I think the number of teams in the field is going to have increase as well.
And it's,
you bet.
It's too bad because on one side you get more exciting football games, more games that are losable for both sides if you increase the number of conference games. On the other side, and that you know is inherently a better product, right? A more exciting, you get more mm-hmm. big games. On the other side, if the committee, you know, if there aren't format changes and the committee is going to look at the quantity of your victories as paramount, I can understand why SEC teams would be reluctant to trade a winnable bye game from a non-conference opponent. You know, trading that for an out-of-conference, you know, an in-conference game you could lose is a rough deal for a lot of teams.
There were more of those games this year, Dan, with an eight-game schedule.
There really were.
I don't remember a season where there were more of those games out there. Without the benefit of an additional Southeastern Conference game.
Yeah, that's why we were talking about a six-way tie just a few weeks left in the season. It's it made for for great entertainment, and there were some exciting games every week, though.
No question about it. I mean, each and every week there was one of those where we walked away going, man, I didn't see that one coming. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's going to change.
I know we're ping-ponging a little bit here, but I wanted to ask. This is our first time getting to talk to Andy since Cameron Indoor is his first visit to the show. So first of all, like, what will you remember, like memories or things that, you know, signature things about Cameron Indoor Stadium?
I've been there before. I had done two women's basketball in-season tournaments with Auburn women. One with Joe Champion as the head coach, another with Nell Fortner as the head coach. So I have been in the building before. So I had experienced just walking into that historic venue for the first time. But it's still impressive to go back. And let me tell you what, they shoehorn their students in there. Holy cow. I mean, they're not side by side. It's almost like they're almost front to back. That's how crowded in they are, and they get into it. And I mean, listen, Neville Arena to me is as good as there is, and we're right in front of the jungle for every one of those games at Neville Arena. But that's an impressive facility, and also what makes it impressive is how Duke plays there. And I think probably people say the same thing about Auburn. How does that Auburn team play? How does that Auburn team react to playing in front of the jungle? Well, you can say that about the Duke team as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great venue. It's historic. I mean, all the banners that hang there. They've got 5 national championship banners hanging in the rafters there. And thank goodness for us that they have improved our perch atop Cameron Indoor. Before, when I was doing the games, you literally walked up a ladder to get into that perch. They actually have regular stairs now.
No, that's nice.
To get there. And
they had just gotten rid of the ladder when I called my game at Troy. They told me that I breathed a sigh of relief. I'm sure the ladder did. The ladder did too. But I was
no kidding. Believe me, I know that. But here's the thing. I love that vantage point to call a basketball game. It reminded me of my time in Illinois calling high school basketball, because you never called a high school basketball game at floor level. You were always at the top of the gym. That's just the way it is. So it reminded me of that a little bit. And I got to tell you this, we had as much room to work with at our vantage point as any place that I work, period.
That's
which
nice.
Is always a plus.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. A great experience. I would have liked to have seen Auburn play better, guard the three better in the first half, rebound a little bit better in the first half of play. But I like the way that team came back and had its chance, despite trailing by 12 early in that second half. It had its opportunities in that ball game. And you walk away from that going, all right, yeah, that's a loss. It's a tough loss. This team is just fine. Get ready for your next ball game. And I thought Auburn responded to that just fine on Sunday against Richmond.
Yeah, no question about it. Then Ohio State coming up Saturday. Yep. Andy, let us know what all else is on tap there with the Auburn Network.
This week on the Talking Tigers podcast, Megan Scofill, who 2 seasons ago won the U.S. Women's Amateur and most recently was honored with the Leah Rawls Atkins Award at Auburn. We get an update as she's getting ready for her pro career that starts in March. Always good to talk with Megan. Coming up on Monday on the Talking Tigers podcast, our first sit-down with Auburn's new soccer coach, James Armstrong. After his press conference yesterday, he had a number of obligations from the media standpoint and we had a chance to sit down and talk, so that comes up on Monday. Don't forget, we've got Tiger Talk Thursday night. We're out of Baumhauer's Victory Grill, and we will talk with Bruce Pearl and Auburn gymnastics coach Jeff Graber. They're getting ready. Gymnastics team is getting ready for its preview meet, I believe, on the 18th at Neville Arena. So we will get an early preview from Coach Graber, and then we'll talk with Coach Pearl. Not only about this past week and that win against Richmond, and now getting ready to go back to Atlanta for the Holiday Hoopsgiving, then that midweek game against Georgia State, and then back on the road in that neutral site on the 21st against Purdue. We're on the air at 6 o'clock Thursday night out of Baumhauer's Victory Grill as Tiger Talk moves back to Thursday on Wings 94.3, and then we're on the air Saturday morning at 10:30 from State Farm Arena in Atlanta as Auburn gets ready for Ohio State. So looking forward to all of it.
Absolutely. You got your Christmas shopping all done?
No, but I have made great inroads into
good.
That this week.
Well, that's good. That's another plus of being back home.
Did we talk about the Sunny Tribute on the air?
No,
was that just
not,
a thing
not
I mentioned?
Andy,
the commercial?
We were talking about it a little earlier. Yeah, I was really disappointed. Shame that I couldn't be there and missed seeing Sonny because just love him. Everybody does.
Auburn did a great job with its tribute video. And I believe they're going to have an expanded edition of that on War Eagle Plus because there was a lot of folks that added to that. It was great to have Sonny and his family there and an opportunity in a small way just to pay tribute to the man. Not only as my partner for my first 5 years, Rod's partner as well for those many years on Auburn basketball, but what Sonny has done for Auburn basketball. Listen, we talk about what Bruce Pearl has done in his 10 and a half years as head coach. Look at what Sonny Smith did for Auburn in the 80s.
Right.
Because what he did is he made Auburn relevant with those trips to the NCAA tournament, that SEC championship, SEC tournament championship, those great players that played for Sonny. I dare say that without Sonny Smith, we're not seeing the success that Bruce Pearl is having right now, because I think he put Auburn on the map again in the 80s and set up that championship team in the 90s with Chris Porter and certainly what Bruce Pearl has done at Auburn. And listen, I mean, there are folks you love being around, and Sonny is one of those for me.
Yes.
And I'm not sure I know of anyone that is just more naturally, has a more natural sense of humor than Sonny Smith. And I miss him. I love having Randall Dickey part of our broadcasts, and I look forward to what that becomes for Randall in Auburn basketball. But I certainly miss Sonny, and we wish Sonny and his family nothing but the best.
Absolutely, Andy. I mean, very, very well said, and I couldn't agree more. We really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us.
You bet.
Enjoy being closer to home and the shorter trips, and take care, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys, have a great day. War Eagle!
The voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does on Tuesdays. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on The Drive.
A well-made patio cover looks great.
The Tigers joining us. Yeah, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in. If you've got any thoughts on the portal, are there some players... Who's the quarterback that you want?
We're calling Jake in at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, we'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. We'll get his thoughts on, I mean, there's so many players that are entering, and you're seeing a lot of players going ahead and scheduling visits here in the next couple of days. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, by the end of the week, quite a few of the ones we're talking about will already have decisions made. All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Hour number two coming up.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here on this wet, rainy Tuesday evening here in the studio. We'd love for you to join in. Hour number two of the show brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, we spent a little time with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, in hour number one. Talk some basketball, football, recruiting, portal. There is a lot going on right now. The college, you know, if you didn't get a chance to get through, we'd love your thoughts on the college football playoff. Did they get it right? What would you do? There are going to be some changes, Dan. I mean, I there's no way I think that there won't be some adjustments made, even though we know it's one more year for sure of a 12-team playoff.
Well, what's funny is the Coastal Carolina game notes call him they tell you how to pronounce Clev.
Oh, they tell me how to – okay, we were talking about some of the guys going to visit. We mentioned quarterback Jackson Arnold a little bit ago, Eric Singleton, the receiver from Georgia Tech. Clev Lubin, I believe, is the pronunciation, was a beast for Coastal Carolina as an edge rusher this past year, had 9.5 sacks. He played junior college ball at, I think it was Iowa Western, with Bobby Jamison Travis. And when Clev entered the portal, Jamison Travis made a post on social media with a big AU, come on down. And he is planning to visit in the next couple of days.
And Auburn's had some success reaching into the Sun Belt for players like Jalen McLeod and Robert Lewis and Kieron Crawford. You know, to go to Coastal and grab another one would be I think would be on brand for Auburn. And he also, you know, it's an Auburn defense, doesn't have like a It's not as though there's this long list of needs for the Auburn defense. It's not like it was when Hugh Freeze arrived and you felt like you needed to go find starters at every single position via the transfer portal because there was very little there. I think you return.
But you lose Jalen McLeod.
No,
so you'd love to have another proven edge rusher.
But you're returning, you know, guys who could be starters on a defense that makes you feel pretty good about next year's team.
Here's the thing.
That's a position though where I mean you can always use more pass rushers.
What you have to do now in college football is you'd better be always looking to bring in somebody who is better or who you think can be better than who you have. And players have to understand that. That's one of the realities of the portal. Players see other new players coming in and go, hey, wait a minute, that guy might take my job, and they'll enter the portal. But because I've heard some conversation where, look, Auburn is bringing in a couple of running backs for visits. And I've heard some people go, but, well, what's that going to do to Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb? Well, it's going to give them competition, and if they're better, then they'll start. If the new guys are better, they'll start. That's what you have to do now. You can't be concerned about, oh, this player that I really like that has potential for a year or two down the road, you better be bringing in somebody who you think gives you a better chance of being better at that position right now.
You're also talking about, you know, aside from quarterback, you're talking about positions where a lot of guys get to play, right?
Yeah, like it's that's not true.
I mean, when you bring in Kieron Crawford, it doesn't mean Jalen McLeod is going to the bench. It means you've added
to bring in Clev Lubin. It doesn't mean Kieron Crawford or Joe Phillips or Maurice Williams are necessarily going to the bench.
No, I think it adds to the rotation. Just like when you added Miles Kelly, it didn't mean Chad Baker-Mazzara was going to get, you know, there weren't going to be any more minutes.
Yeah, that's worked all right, hadn't
for Chad. Yeah, so I think there's now at quarterback, it doesn't work that way.
No.
You bring in a portal quarterback.
No, if you're rotating quarterbacks, you're probably struggling offensively.
But and probably offensive linemen too would be another one, but virtually everywhere else. Like you're talking about the having multiple options at the ready.
All right, let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Greg is up first. Hey, Greg.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing on this rainy day?
Man, pretty good. Trying to stay dry.
Yeah, buddy. Well, we got basketball starting today, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah.
Little team I coach anyway. But now I was listening to what you just said about there, and I watch what some of these people post on Twitter or X, whatever you want to say. But we need to understand, and I done got to the point. When you got these kids coming in making more money than I'm going to make in a decade.
Or maybe ever.
Year, I give zero. I have no care. I mean, I like the guy as a person. I'm pulling for all of them. I was pulling for Robbie Ashford, and I'm pulling for everybody that's sticking around and wants to be in Auburn. I'm definitely pulling for them. But Hugh Freeze can't afford it no more. He should have went and got somebody last year, and what he wanted to do – and you can go back and watch the films, and everybody that's been able to stomach it on them losses to go back and watch them, you see the guys, though, but you see tunnel vision from your quarterback. And he's holding on the ball, scared to make a mistake. He's scared. He was scared to be him. And I hate that his mental got to that point. Anyway, I said something, I don't know, I guess it was before we even got thrown, maybe. It might have been. It's been a while. But he's in the portal again. And I said something about him when he was playing for Texas. That Malik Murphy.
From Duke. I was just, you know, it's
I want him.
Well, here's the thing. I just, you know, he is a completely different kind of quarterback, man. He can sling it. There is no question about it. Threw for almost 3,000 yards this year. Did not have one single game where he had positive yards rushing. He is a drop back. He is a pro drop back. I just wonder how that would fit if Hugh Freeze wants to run the RPO.
You're right about the numbers on that, but you've seen him scramble some when he's at Texas a little bit. I think the system that he was in, which you know Texas in a sense was kind of that way with viewers a little bit, but he's going to use his legs.
Although you know what, Greg, if you improve the situation on the offensive line and you've got the receivers, maybe you don't need the quarterback running as much as they've run the first 2 years.
Hugh hasn't had you know, all of his quarterbacks haven't been running quarterbacks in the past. So, I mean, people think Malik Willis, and it's got to be, you know, somebody that can run for, you know, 50 yards a game or something like that. So, no, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It's going to be interesting to see. I have heard that Auburn is definitely, you know, taking a good look at Malik Murphy. In the meantime, Jackson Arnold's supposed to be on campus day after tomorrow.
Yeah, I've seen something about that, you know, and I'll be honest with you. I don't care. This is me. I've been saying this for a long time. I don't care about the bowl games. I would say, dude, the bowl games is an exhibition game, and I would say would not rank a single football team until after week four. And then all you have is the college football playoffs. Let's just be honest. This is treated it's basically like a semi-pro football league now. It's a business. Make it like that because all these kids is going to opt out and everything else. You don't even know what you got half the time. It's more like a scout team playing in some of these bowl games. But I don't care what they do. I want a quarterback that goes out there that is fearless. And I like throwing, but somewhere along the way, his mental was fractured. And he was scared to turn that ball loose, and he developed tunnel vision. You can watch him in the Alabama game when he threw that last interception. Now he had guys coming across the middle and everything else. I mean, you ain't got to hit the home run every time. You know, give just put the ball in the people that need to have the ball in their hands and let them do something with it.
I'm curious how much Greg. I'm curious how much of that was beaten into him at Auburn, and how much of that was sort of his profile as a quarterback. I'm not familiar enough with Thorne's work at Michigan State to give you the answer there. I don't disagree too much with that assessment. I think you've heard Freeze in the past say he's prioritizing, and you know other offensive coaches say, but I mean Freeze really prioritizing decision making, accuracy, timing, like correct decisive choices by the quarterback. Seems like physically he could go, if it's a scrambler, if it's a more stationary guy with an arm to get him out of trouble, like that part isn't like Freeze has had success both ways, but if you're not making correct quick decisions and you're not getting the ball there accurately, feels like a lot of the other stuff doesn't matter.
Well, you know, and I'm not gonna hold y'all up, but I think Thorne had it all along, and I think Bo Nix had it all along. But whenever you feel like people do not believe in you, and some people's got it, and it's very, very few that can deal with negative adversity and are fearless, just fearless. And there's very few that can handle that mentality. And when you see it, you know they got it. You know they got it. And Thorne had everything else but that. And you can tell that, you know, when they snatch these guys out, and I understand it. Yeah, this guy's making all this money. Everybody out there is getting paid all this money for collectives and signing this stuff. I get it. But it's a business. It's a business now. And I hate to say it like that, but, I mean, the amateurism in it, the people going out and playing with their heart, it's just – man, let it hang, man. Go out there. And just,
I mean, there's some that do, but sure, that's not the main thing. It's going to be really interesting to see when the lawsuit, if it is settled. Dan, did you see the reaction from the three original players that filed this lawsuit against the NCAA?
Which lawsuit
today?
Are you talking about?
The one that's supposedly going to get the $2.8 billion settlement. You know, the judge has got. April is when it was coming back in front of the judge. The three players who originally filed the lawsuit aren't happy with just the $2.8 billion settlement. They say the players have to have a say in this agreement. You've got the NCAA college football is still, the NCAA still wants players to not be labeled employees. The players want an organization. They want to have a voice and there to be negotiations like there are in professional sports. And if that's the case, then we might, and to what Greg was talking about, that would be at least a step toward being able to have contracts that would allow you to have more than a one-year deal with players so they wouldn't be players jumping every single year.
Oh, I think those two things, it feels binary to me, where you either have a scenario, you have a world where the players are employees with a union and with the right to collectively bargain, or they don't have either of those things, right?
Right, and I agree. I don't see how you have one without the other.
Right, and so I think there's always been talk that this lawsuit could be because it's you've got the lawsuit from the past players, and you've got the lawsuit that features players who have eligibility remaining right now, and I think they're separate lawsuits that were merged together, and the settlement. In order for the settlement to pass muster with the current players,
current and future,
yes,
those are the ones that are concerned about.
That's
this.
Where a players' association or a union of some kind organization could be coming, and that would be another seismic change to something that's getting back to Greg's call. Like, I don't know if I necessarily associate the professionalization of college sports with the problems Auburn has had as a passing offense
the last couple of years.
Like, I don't know if money is the reason why some of those things. I think he made good points, and I think it's
decisions, personnel decisions, sure.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it was money-driven.
And maybe money is playing a larger role in where quarterbacks go as opposed to going to the place that would be the best fit. You go to the place making the best financial offer, and you have sort of styles clashes between this.
Yeah, hopefully players have enough foresight, they and their families or their handlers or their agents or whatever, can try to get the best of both worlds. Go somewhere where, I'd fit in there, but I'm also going to be well compensated.
I want you, because we were talking about a little bit off the air, what do you think of a potential Jackson Arnold acquisition by Auburn? Because he's a big time.
I think it's really interesting. He would be one of the more highly touted quarterbacks that Auburn had ever brought in. Like I said, Oklahoma didn't. People go, yeah, but they stunk this year. Well, as I said, they went into the year with a new offensive line, and then they came into the season losing their top receivers in the preseason, and then they lost the top two they had left in their first game. So, I mean, they didn't have the players that they expected to have around him off a team that lost a ton of talent a year before. I don't think the luster is off Jackson Arnold. He doesn't have the resume that you would optimally, you'd love to have someone who, has started for a couple of seasons and all the strengths and what weaknesses there are. He's only started, I guess he started 7 or 8 games. But again, I like the touchdown to interception ratio, 12-3 this past year. He ran for 440-something yards this past year as well. I think you do a lot worse.
The only thing that would surprise me about Arnold being the choice is that I think you would have thought going in that Hugh Freeze, he'd want a quarterback with potential, but I think you'd want more proven production at the college level. That's the only thing that would be a.
But see,
that has nothing to do with how Arnold can play in 2025.
No,
right?
I understand. Like
Arnold can be a great quarterback either way, but I would have guessed that the priority would have been.
Who would that be?
I know.
That's the thing. I mean, because you're talking about quarterbacks sometimes maybe opting for the biggest paycheck and not necessarily fitting. A coach had better find somebody who's going to fit with what he wants to do. And you've got to find that and try to find the player that, yes, has the most potential, but you'd like to have some numbers to base that on as well. I don't know who that is right now. Who have been people been talking about? They've been talking about John Mateer. He's not in the portal even yet. Now, he's expected to follow his offensive coordinator to Oklahoma, and that may be very well why Jackson Arnold is in the portal too. And people have talked Lenoris Sellers. Lenoris Sellers, Robbie Ashford just went into the portal. Not that he was a threat to Lenoris Sellers.
Lenoris Sellers is in the news, but it's because he was third-team All-Conference today.
Yes, he was. Lenoris Sellers' younger brother just signed with South Carolina last week. So, I mean, maybe he goes into the portal, but you can't bank on those guys that are there. I think you've got to deal with the available pool. Now, I understand that their players that aren't in the portal that teams know will be available if the price is right.
There are like some post-hype sleepers in the portal. Tyler Van Dyke, former Miami quarterback who played at Wisconsin this past year. He's got a year of eligibility left. People thought when he had that
stretch. Wisconsin sucked this year.
Yeah, but he had that stretch at Miami, right, where it was like, I mean, he looked like he was a, you know, a future NFL quarterback before moving on to, you know, it went south at Miami, and then he ended up at Wisconsin. But, no, you're right. I mean, the people like the Tulane quarterback. But you're talking about, I guess, Caden Salter would also be in this mix from Liberty.
Caden Salter had a disappointing year this year after a much better year as a junior.
Right. I just wonder, I mean, Miller Moss would be, you know, from USC.
But he's another guy that started some. And I mean, there are a lot of pros and cons for, you know, most of the players in the portal.
And I'm not saying he's the right guy for Auburn. And I don't know how it would work. And I'm almost certain he's not coming here. But I watched both of the UNLV quarterbacks games against major conference teams, and he can play. The numbers aren't overwhelming, and I know people are a little bit alarmed by the fact that he bailed on his team after four games.
Yeah.
But Sluka can play. Like, that guy's a good, like, he's the most Pavia-esque quarterback out there in the portal.
You just worry things don't go well, he's gone again. Because that's the way it is now.
Right, except, although this would be his last year, like, he doesn't have a redshirt year to burn now. It's like, this would be his last year in college football. So he doesn't, I mean, he could be gone again, but he didn't have anywhere to go this time. Like, last year at UNLV, he said, I'm going to play four games, evaluate the situation, and he decided after four games, I'm going to take my red shirt and do it again this year. We'll see where he goes and if it pays off. But I think he's a, I think he's actually, I think he's a pretty good quarterback.
Hey, we'd love for you to let us know who you would like. I mean,
it's it's not a feel-good story, though, wherever Sluka ends up as like a, like, even if, I mean, because it really is. Yeah, it's a guy who, like, it's so mercenary and so corporate, right? To go with, like, all right, well, I'm just gonna reopen the bidding after, like, I'm gonna quit this team.
Yeah, my team's not good enough after four games. I can find something better than this.
He was on a 40.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. Whatever. I can make more.
That's what it was. Yeah, it had nothing to do with winning, which I think is part of the reason that it's like, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth as a college football story, is that, yeah, it has nothing to do with winning.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Don't forget, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of the hour, so come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
Achilles tendonitis is often as painful as it sounds. The Orthopedic.
Welcome back to The Drive, the Tuesday edition, hour number two here in the studio. As we work through, we promise you there will be some fancy new bumpers and returns coming soon. But in the meantime, we're going unplugged. Yeah. We're going acoustic here with our returns.
We're used to some people welcoming us back in. There's nobody except us to do that right now. But we'll work on that. But we've been talking. Man, I mean, it does. It seems like every time I refresh and look somewhere, I see another player that's visiting. They're going to be more portal visitors here this week than we had most high school recruiting weekends. I mean, I would expect Auburn to have upwards of a dozen players in by the end of the weekend.
And with graduation weekend, it's not a bad time to show off campus, right?
No, there's still some students around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, get them in after today. That's a good thing that nobody needed to be in yesterday and today, because you can't really show them around because it's just raining. It's just, you know, just sort of dreary looking. It's supposed to be really nice weather. Going to be a little chilly, but hey, it's the middle of December. But yes, I mean, some of the names, we mentioned a few of them. I mentioned Jackson Arnold, the quarterback, Eric Singleton, the receiver.
Is Lubin on this list?
Yeah,
we talked about him a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. Clev Lubin, the edge rusher from Coastal Carolina. Darrell Robinson from UConn, running back from UConn, says he's been offered by Auburn. He's expected in sometime soon. Ahmad Hardy, the running back from ULM, is expected in next week, but I believe he's visiting Ole Miss first. And again, it's tough. When you're not first, you may not get a shot.
I know both Hardy, and I mean, it shouldn't be shocking with the track record for Lane Kiffin in the portal,
right,
and the fact that he also doesn't have playoff games to worry about.
He's got a bowl game, but
I get the feeling he's more worried about.
He's also come out and he's commented about how dumb the current system is, having to try to maintain your roster, coach your team getting ready for a bowl game and be handling the portal all at the same time.
Right, and they're going to have to figure out quarterback with Jackson Dart moving on, right? Like, that's another, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to have to, after a long career playing for Coach Kiffin, they're going to have to figure out what to do at the quarterback position. Ahmad Hardy, like you said, is somebody that is an Ole Miss target. He's also, I think, Kentucky is trying to line up a visit for Hardy as well, because they're
Kentucky's trying a lot of visits for a lot.
Trying to stop the bleeding.
They're close to 20 players in the portal now.
Yeah, so
and it's not just backups and guys you've never heard of.
They got playing time to offer. The flip side of that. And then I know Ole Miss is also in on the Georgia Tech receiver
that Singleton. Auburn, Singleton, but he's visiting Auburn first.
Who's going to get a visit?
See, he's coming to Auburn first. Again, first shot is sometimes the best shot. The tight end out of Oklahoma, Bauer Sharp, who is originally from Dothan, is supposed to be in Auburn third. You know, Auburn's going to have a quarterback, a couple of receivers, and a tight end all in town at the same time, it looks like, Thursday.
That's a position at tight end where Auburn is losing so many snaps mm-hmm. from this past year, too. I mean, Rivaldo moving on, Luke Deal moving on,
and then
Micah going to the portal.
Right.
I know Brandon is...
Looks like he may be headed to NC State. That's his first visit.
Brandon Frazier is eligible to return, but I know Auburn is excited about both of the tight. Like, I know somebody who saw Hollis Davidson in person this year and came away blown away, like thinking that's a guy who you don't know how he's going to take to blocking in year one, mm-hmm. but that's a guy who That's a big, fast guy who catches the ball and gets open.
Yeah.
And that's something that Auburn's offense could find a use for, even if they don't ask him to do a ton of the dirty work at the tight end position. But I still think Auburn would like to go get a veteran somewhere. You didn't see too much. I mean, Rico Walker's still around, but you didn't see too much of him in his first year.
Special teams.
So I think if a veteran tight end could mm-hmm. slide into a spot near the top of the depth chart for Auburn if they acquire one over these next couple of weeks.
And they're obviously looking for offensive linemen. Josh Thompson out of Northwestern, I believe he's going to be in town.
Auburn's had success
tomorrow or Thursday.
They've had success at the line of scrimmage with Josh Thompson before. So,
he's a guy that started Summit right tackle for them. And I know Auburn would love a left tackle, but I think they wouldn't mind bringing in a couple of tackles. Wendell Mose is an offensive lineman out of Arizona. I think he's coming in later on this week. So,
Auburn would love it if one of the tackles on the team right now, between now and March, right, between now and the end of spring practice, if one of those guys could develop into somebody who looks like they should start at right or even mm-hmm. or even sure. left tackle. I would expect Auburn to add.
I think, but you've got to have a couple of experienced guys just in case.
I would think Auburn's adding at least one at the tackle spot, and probably a guy who could potentially be left tackle. We'll see how many of those guys are out there in the portal. I mean, the internal options really interest me though, right? I mean, whether it's Tyler Johnson getting a little bit more time, that was a point Christian made yesterday. People remember. I mean, Tyler is new to the sport. Right, that's a guy who he was a late arrival to football, and that's someone I would not throw out the possibility of Tyler Johnson eventually being a contributor at tackle for this team, and maybe it's in 2025. Seth Wilford redshirted, but was a top junior college tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves Dre Carter. I don't necessarily know if it's at tackle.
No, he's a guard.
And then I guess if you felt really good about two guards other than Dylan Wade. Maybe you play Dylan Wade at right tackle.
Yeah,
and someone at left
tackle. You know that he can, but still, everyone feels like his future is at guard. And then we talked more offensive. I think somebody was saying, "Oh, Auburn's just bringing in defensive guys." It's, they're recruiting quite a few players on both sides. Did see another one, Zach Poser, Poiser, I think is the guy's name. He's a safety from Jack State, and people will go, "Oh, come on with the guys from the small schools." He's visiting LSU tomorrow, Auburn Thursday, Florida Friday. So it's like, yeah, the guys from the small schools who can play. He's a redshirt freshman who's good size, 6'2", around 200, had, I think, two or three picks this past year.
Yeah, the record's not perfect, but, I mean, Auburn's had some success going to the mid-majors and especially mm-hmm. the Sun Belt and getting some guys that have played a meaningful role for this team.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll check in with Jake Crane on the other side, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive. Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that is Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Ah, man, it's going great. It's a heck of a time in the sports world right now, that's for sure.
It is wild. I mean, we'll probably get to some college basketball here in a little bit, want to do that. But, I mean, college football, I mean, we had – with it's crazy. Signing day, the 72-hour signing period last week, college championship games, college football playoff seedings are set, and the portal all in the last 5 days.
Yeah, it's basically like a Thanksgiving dinner of college sports, especially college football, when you look at all these things happening at once. And, you know, even if your team's not in it, they're obviously being affected, whether it's the transfer portal in a good way or the transfer portal in a bad way, and then obviously signing day in a good way or signing day in a bad way. So everybody's kind of touched by this moment in time.
Jake, if I remember our conversation last week, you were pretty pessimistic. I think a lot of folks were, that the committee would choose correctly. You thought that Alabama was probably going to leapfrog SMU in the event of Clemson beating SMU in the ACC championship game. Do you think the committee got it right with SMU included and the 9-3 SEC teams and 10-2 Miami left out?
Well, I mean, if you take your Auburn fan hat off, and this is something that, you know, I think we do a pretty decent job of at Crane & Company, the show we do, is that I was always of the thought that a lot of things should matter, right? The only thing that should matter over the other is if everything else is equal or close to equal, then head-to-head should usurp anything else. And you saw that happen with Alabama being seated higher than Ole Miss and South Carolina. Another thing that I've talked about is win-loss record has to matter, just like strength of schedule does. I'm fine to sit here and have a conversation about why a 9-3 team could possibly be in over a 10-2 team, like we saw with Miami. What I don't want to have happen is that an 11-1 Power 4 team that plays an extra game as a reward because they, you know, finish in the top two of their conference automatically gets usurped by a 9-3 team because of one stat, whether that's strength of schedule or whatever. So, I mean, I was surprised, I think, as everybody else was, that they decided to pick SMU over Alabama, not because it was the right thing to do, but because, you know, Alabama's a bigger brand than SMU, and we can't forget this is a business at the end of the day, and the goal is to make as much money as possible. And while SMU is very well endowed from a financial standpoint, Alabama is a much bigger brand. So I think at the end of the day, the committee saw strength of record and then understood the importance of keeping the incentive of having conference championship games matter. I actually think coaches like Lane Kiffin coming out and saying what they said, and even Rhett Lashley saying what he said, actually worked in the favor against Alabama as far as talking about de-incentivizing the want to or the need to play in a conference championship game. Mm-hmm. So do I think they got the best 12 teams in overall? I wouldn't say that because I would bet on Alabama to beat SMU on a neutral site, but I think they got the 12 most deserving teams, or at least the best way they could do it with the rules being written the way they were as far as Clemson being allowed in. I do think they got it right on that front.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Jake. I mean, and now let's face it. Had Clemson won that ball game by 17 like it was going into the fourth quarter, I don't think SMU would have been in.
I agree with that 100%. But optics matter. Aesthetics matter. What makes the wedding better when the wedding venue looks better?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Lane Kiffin, and I've always thought, you know, maybe I'm on an island here, because this was decided a couple of weeks ago. You know, yes, Alabama and Ole Miss earned a spot ahead of South Carolina by winning that game on the field, but I've always thought the case for Alabama over Ole Miss was a little bit dubious. I thought so. I mean, there are metrics that tell you Ole Miss the better team. They're Ole Miss played better against Georgia and South Carolina than Alabama did. It felt like the argument for Alabama over South Carolina had a lot to do with Alabama's historical superiority to Ole Miss and their and like you said, the brand appeal.
Well, in that case, I think that's one of the rare instances where you do look at brand. Because it's a lot easier argument to make when there's a head-to-head outcome, because that's meritocracy. It was settled on the field. Alabama beat South Carolina. Ole Miss beat South Carolina. Ole Miss and Alabama did not play. There was a lot of equivalence. both have, you know, a nice big win. Both have a really bad loss. Alabama had a couple bad losses compared to Ole Miss's when you look at it at the end of the day. When you look at common opponents, it's about even. So that, I think, is one of the rare cases where you may look at a brand and say, you know what, it is so equal and there's no head-to-head. Let's make the money play and go with Alabama.
Do you, looking at the bracket, looking at the 12 teams that are in, looking at the matchups, what stands out to you upon? I mean, treating this one like, you know, it's like we just got the NCAA tournament bracket, right? Like what stands out to
it's
you?
It's like we got the NCAA tournament bracket on some kind of psychotics. I mean, because yeah, you're not going to take a team with an auto bid and give them one of the number one seeds.
Oh yeah, boosting the teams to 3 and 4 because they won their conference.
That can't
and seeding the tournament accordingly.
I can't believe they agreed to that.
It was all to keep Notre Dame. At the top four, Jake. It was all
Guys, I think the biggest disservice was the seeding, not who got in.
Oh, that's yes, absolutely.
Like, if I'm – and everybody keeps talking about, well, if I'm Tennessee, I would be upset. If I'm Oregon, I'm unbelievably upset.
No kidding. They're the only only unbeaten team. They're the number one seed, and they've got a much tougher road.
But they're prohibited,
they,
though, Jay.
They
I mean, they're yeah, go ahead.
Well, Dan, they sowed this seed when they put Boise State number 12 in the first college football playoff ranking. Now they couldn't drop them if they didn't lose. Boise State should not be a 3 seed. I don't think Boise State should be a 4 seed. I think Arizona State should be the 3 seed. Clemson should be the 4 seed, and Boise should be the 12 seed. But as far as the seeding the way it is now, I mean, I'm shocked that Penn State only fell back to 6. Penn State's got – there is a case to be made that I would trade you the bye for Penn State.
Absolutely. Pass. Absolutely. Like hosting SMU, going to Phoenix to take on Boise? Absolutely.
No, I mean, but even if you – and I agree with a lot of what you said there, Jake, but even if you move Arizona State to 3 and Clemson to 4, you've still thrown off the seeding of this tournament because you felt the need to keep – and I know they're prohibited from putting they have to put conference champions in the top 4 spots. That rule needs to be reevaluated immediately because I think
what you do is you move 3, 4, 5, 6 all down.
Yeah, the reason I said that is because that's within the framework of the rules. I don't like the rules. I think you should take the top 12 teams. If Ohio State and Oregon finish in the top 4, they should both get byes.
Yep.
There's no reason to put conference champions 1 through 4. And even to keep Notre Dame out, I still don't think that's a good enough excuse. Now, we can talk about whether Notre Dame should be, you know, where they're at or whether they should be the 5th seed or whatever, but to throw the baby out with the bathwater in that way has never made sense to me, and I'm still shocked they agreed to it.
No, I think they're going to have to do just like the NCAA basketball tournament does, just make the adjustment to, yes, the top 5 conference champions are in. And then we'll just seed the whole thing.
Guaranteed inclusion, but then you seed the tournament accordingly, which is probably it.
Yeah, I mean, I could meet you halfway, but I only think the top 4 conference champions should be in. I don't think there should be a 5th. I think it's either 4. I don't know why we added the 5th. They threw that bone to the group of 5.
Right.
Well, turns out the group of 5 team is the 3 seed.
Yeah, these rules are impacting a college football that stopped existing a couple of years ago, and that's where, I would think that, I mean, that's sort of the crux of the SEC argument, is the belief that every other league but the SEC and the Big Ten should be a one-bid league because the leagues have because the power has concentrated just to those two spots. All right, is there a matchup you really like of those first 4 that we get in the NCAA tournament?
Well, the best matchup is Tennessee-Ohio State.
Sure it is.
At least on paper. I mean, if we're going to look at the other ones, there could be a better game. I actually made the case today. I think this Tennessee team is built in the best way out of any of these recent Tennessee teams that have had success to actually go win this game against Ohio State. As far as SMU-Penn State, with the weather and just the way these teams are built, it's going to be really tough for SMU. I think Clemson and Texas is a little more interesting. I was shocked to see that the spread was bigger on Texas and Clemson than SMU-Penn State. That really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I tell you what, guys, this Indiana-Notre Dame game, and by the way, kind of a cool nugget, Cade Klubnik played Quinn Ewers in the state championship game in high school in Texas. So it's cool to see that matchup again in the college football playoff. But this Indiana, I wonder what the odds would have been if I would have came to you guys and said, hey, what are the odds that the state of Indiana post-day game between two playoff teams within that state at the beginning of the year. It would have been astronomical. You would have thought Notre Dame, but in no world would you have thought that Indiana would be in the college football playoff. But when you look stylistically, I think this Notre Dame-Indiana game is going to be really low scoring. A lot of people look at that Indiana-Ohio State score if they didn't watch the game and say, oh, well, Indiana's going to get blown out. They're not very good. If you remember, it was 7-7 with a minute to go before halftime. Indiana dropped a snap at punter, and Ohio State scored, then went 3-and-out on the first drive of the second half, and Ohio State ran a punt back for a touchdown. And Indiana is not a team that is built to come back from down double digits against a high-quality team. They could get away with it against some of the other teams they played, you know, Mary, Margaret, and the Sisters of the Poor and Dyslexic or whatever, but against a team that's worth their salt, they're not built to come back like that. They're an on-schedule, routine-style team. I'm telling you guys right now, if they're, Indiana is the number two team in the country against the run.
Mm-hmm.
If Notre Dame can't throw the ball, this game is going to get very, very interesting very, very quickly. I just worry that Rourke, the quarterback for Indiana, can't create enough if all the variables around him aren't perfect.
Long layoffs, too, for these teams.
And a chance of some seriously chilly, nasty
weather.
If you had
told me before the season, Jake, if you'd said that you guarantee a playoff game in Indiana featuring two teams from Indiana, I would have thought, all right, Notre Dame goes 12-0, and they're the 5 seed because of the rules. And I guess Ball State rumbles through the MAC, and they're the 5, like they're the 5th, they're the non. I think Ball State finished last in the MAC this year. By the way, like they were among the worst teams in like mid-major college football. But
yeah.
But I would have thought that. I mean, that would have felt more realistic 3 months ago than Indiana or Purdue. You know, working their way through the Big Ten,
and how good the Big 12 predictions were too with Arizona State,
yeah, Oklahoma State,
Oklahoma
at the
State
top.
Was going to be the team to look out for.
Indiana State at the bottom, Arizona State at the bottom.
If you got the Big 12 standings right, you before the season, you know nothing about college football. I'm sorry, even if you were right.
But you may be a whole lot better off if you did.
I don't trust you to do it again next year.
No kidding. In the wild world of college football, the portal is open. Players are scheduling visits. Got to get your thoughts. I mean, look, Auburn has to come up with two quarterbacks in the portal. We see that Jackson Arnold is visiting on Thursday. Thoughts?
Well, look, what I've tried to tell Auburn fans is that, you know, you can only get from the portal what is in the portal. Like, there's not always going to be a Cam Ward in the portal. So the way I look at it is, at least from what I think, from my perspective, is that Hugh Freeze has to win this year. Probably 8 games, and one of those 8 needs to be against Alabama or Georgia. So you basically got 2 options. Either you bring in some experienced baller at quarterback that hops in the portal. Johnny Mateer from Washington State, I think, is the best quarterback that could hop in the portal. If he does he go to Oklahoma or does he decide to return to Washington State? So you don't know if that guy's going to be in there. Or you've got to play a young guy and you got to go the DJ Lagway, Lenora Sellers route of either you are selling instant success on the field or the hope for the future is so bright they can't part ways with you. That's where I'm at. So the question becomes, if that elite quarterback is not in the portal, is Jackson Arnold good enough? And he's got a ton of potential, right? I mean, there's a reason he was rated the way he was at a high school. We saw flashes of it in college. But you already took a mediocre quarterback from Michigan State, and he wound up being mediocre. You had a quarterback that leaves Oklahoma. They had a very average to below average year. He wasn't great. If this guy doesn't pan out, I think they're going to fire you. So I don't look at it from the standpoint of, oh, let's act like the coach has 30 years at Auburn. You've either got one of two routes. Really, 3. One is the experienced guy comes in and you win enough games to let the young guys get up to speed and you kind of buy yourself some time. Or you let a young guy come in and show so much promise they can't let you go. Or option 3, you bring in a guy like Jackson Arnold, but if you do, he better ball.
Yep.
He better ball, and Auburn fans better feel really, really good about it, or else it's going to seem like you have no idea what you're doing when you're an offensive guy that is supposed quarterback guru. So that's where I think Hugh Freeze is and Auburn is right now.
Yeah, it is a very there's a very narrow line that is, you know, He can't get wide at either side.
You're out of equity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're out of it.
Man, before we let you go, the SEC is, speaking of balling, basketball, it's unbelievable looking at these teams. Only one team in the league has three losses, and there's 10 teams ranked and a couple of others. Missouri's not ranked. They're 8-1, and they beat Kansas last week. How good is this league in basketball?
It's the best league in college basketball, at least up to this point, and I don't see them slowing down. If South Carolina doesn't lose to North Florida on opening night, there's no bad loss in the league. But you know what? I keep trying to tell everybody, Auburn, this is great for Auburn. This is great for Auburn. The more teams that are better, the less chance you have of having a bad loss, not only at the beginning or the middle of conference play, but at the end when you're fighting for a one seed. So you want to root on the SEC. You want Tennessee to beat Miami. You want Arkansas to beat Michigan. You want Alabama to beat Creighton, because the better the league does, the more cushion you have. And Auburn is really, really good. I think they're the best team in the country. Tennessee has beaten absolutely no one. Tennessee's pretty good. I don't think they're elite. So we need the SEC to be as good as possible. If we go and play a Missouri and happen to lose because the ball doesn't bounce our way, it's not nearly as bad of a loss that could cost us 1-2 seeds at the end of the day. Guys, I'm sitting, never in my life did I think I would be at the point where ESPN sends me a notification that Duke just upset Auburn basketball at Cameron Indoor.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? That really is. Great stuff as always. Jake, let everybody know, with so much going on, what have you got coming up on Crane & Company?
Oh, man, well, we're diving so deep into it. We got Rhett Lashley coming on the show tomorrow. We're previewing all the games, talking about the transfer portal, what Auburn needs, what has to happen. We got Sherrone Moore coming on here in a couple days as well. So if you love college football, if you love college sports, head over to Crane & Company on YouTube, C-R-A-I-N & Company. We're talking about everything. We take live calls and have a really live chat.
Great stuff. Thanks again, Jake. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
See you guys.
See you, bud.
Jake Crane joining us. We need to get to our final break of the Tuesday show. Stick with us.
Four Seasons Federal Credit Union.
How close? We may find out how close Auburn is to adding someone from the portal tomorrow. If I'm not mistaken, Auburn didn't have anybody go in today. What's going on? I don't know. I thought that was. I don't think it's done. There's still plenty of time.
It would appear as though everyone who has gone in thus far were players where you sort of understand it based on their outlook on the team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're not kidding. But yeah, Jason will join us at the top of the show tomorrow. I hope you will as well. We're out of time, though, here on the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.